13:30 UTC on Wednesday, December 6th. And this is Zimbabwe Today.
They are already hard at work convincing Zimbabwean business people outside the country and foreign investors to grab the economic opportunities in Zimbabwe.
That was Tuso Kumalo reporting from Johannesburg, where efforts are underway to draw more business to Zimbabwe. We'll have that story and more coming up.
Good evening. I'm Kudzalai Mutatwa.
And I'm Chilonjere on VOA Zimbabwe Today.
The South Africa-based Zimbabwe Business Forum, an organization of Zimbabwean business people that aims to lure investors to Zimbabwe, has pledged its support to President Emmerson Mnangagwa. Mnangagwa's focus on reviving the economy. The organization says it has doubled its efforts to recruit businesses. However, as Thuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg, experts say more than just talk will be required to gain investor confidence.
Since taking office last month, Zimbabwe President Emmerson Mnangagwa has put economic revival at the center of his administration. He has gone a step further to state his resolve to re-engage the international community that had long been disengaged by former President Robert Mugabe's regime. The South African-based Zimbabwean Business Forum says having a president with such passion for rebuilding the country's ailing economy is the best news Zimbabwe has had in almost four decades. Executive Chairman of the Forum, Marshall Sankara, says they are already hard at work convincing Zimbabwean business people outside the country and foreign investors to grab the economic opportunities in Zimbabwe. Sankara, who is also a businessman, says the Forum is convinced Zimbabwe is open for business.
We are very interested and we are going to do some massive investments in Zimbabwe. We are very confident that this regime, under the leadership of Comrade Mnangagwa, going to loosen, investment policies, which were so choking off to investors.
Sankara's Forum seeks to lure $100 million worth of investment by the end of 2018. But senior researcher Samungele Hadebe of the Chris Hani Institute in Johannesburg says investors will first want to see practical guarantees that Zimbabwe is now a safe investment destination.
The problem that we've always had was that of policy inconsistency, issues of corruption, personalization of public institutions, issues of fiscal discipline. Those are practical things that cost no money, but that people would want to see very soon. Then we can realize a massive turnaround of the economy.
Many believe ending cash shortages should top the government's priorities list. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
Gunshots were heard at the Zimbabwe Republic Police Commissioner General Augustine Chihuri's house in Harare Borodel neighborhood today. The Herald newspaper in Harare reports a rogue policeman who was allegedly guarding the home attempted to loot the property. According to the Herald, a police source says Chihuri's gardener saw the suspect stealing household property and alerted an officer who had come to the house for a routine inspection in the morning. When confronted, the suspect fired shots toward the officer, who quickly called for backup from police headquarters. The suspect allegedly tried to escape by using one of Chihuri's vehicles, but failed because the house had been surrounded. The suspect then set the house on fire, damaging the roof. The suspect was arrested after running out of ammunition.
Many Zimbabweans hope that under their new president, Emmerson Mnangagwa, the country will see stability and economic growth. However, Joseph Siegel, the director of research at the Africa Center for Strategic Studies in Washington, D.C., says it is not clear the new government can resolve potentially destabilizing problems. He spoke with my colleague, Kate Pound Dawson, and says the government must act quickly to address fundamental problems such as corruption and the weak economy.
I believe that we were seeing a growing risk of instability in Zimbabwe prior to the change. There was a growing lack of confidence in leadership and with ZANU-PF. And with the change in government, while we've seen a change in leadership, really we've seen a retention of control by ZANU-PF. With support of the army. And so in that way, there hasn't been change. And so I think the same drivers of instability that we were seeing prior to the change remain in place. And so I do think that until those factors are addressed, we're going to, Zimbabwe is going to face growing challenges of instability.
That leads me to my next question. Many had hoped for new faces in the government, a more inclusive cabinet, perhaps with opposition members, bringing in younger faces. None of that has happened. Does that work against the government?
Well, I think it works against Zimbabwe moving forward on a path of reform. I think the narrative that the army and some within ZANU-PF have held is that the problem was an internal ZANU-PF problem, and there was competing tensions over the succession. And so, the faction that's moved forward and emerged on top feels like it's, solved that problem. In fact, the problem in Zimbabwe is much broader than ZANU-PF. It has to do with the fundamental processes of the economy and how open and participatory that is. It has to do with fundamental issues about the political system and openness and expression for political opposition. It has to do with the politicization of the military. It has to do with corruption. And these are fundamental issues that are going to have to be addressed. And and these aren't issues that the ZANU-PF can deal with on their own.
My last question is, poor economy, aging dictator who was trying to build a dynasty, why has Zimbabwe been fairly stable and quiet over the last 20 years as conditions got so bad?
To be fair, we shouldn't characterize Zimbabwe as having been stable over the last 20 years. We've seen a major exodus of the population, people who were repressed or feel they couldn't live in Zimbabwe. We saw the hyperinflation in Zimbabwe, where they couldn't even keep up with the percentage increases. And we've seen growing levels of repression and a major contraction of the economy during that time. And so I don't think it's been unstable. There hasn't been a civil war, but I think that owes more to the ethics, the ethos within Zimbabwe of trying to work through legally based solutions. And a willingness of the opposition to pursue nonviolent means of change. Nonetheless, the pressures and the hunger for change are very deep within Zimbabwe. And unless those fundamental factors, again, having to do with opening up the economy, opening up the political system, putting greater checks and balances on both the political leadership and on the military, then we're going to continue to see these drivers of instability growing.
That was Professor Joseph Siegel at the Africa Center for Strategic Studies at the U.S. National Defense University. He spoke with Kate Pound Dawson.
A Zimbabwean media studies specialist in South Africa says he won't be leaving for his homeland anytime soon. Sheba Mbofu at the University of Johannesburg says he remains deeply scarred by events that happened under the rule of Robert Mugabe's ZANU-PF party. Darren Taylor reports from Johannesburg.
Sheba Mbofu grew up in rural Gwanda district in Matabeleland South. He has fond memories of hunting rabbits and herding cattle. He says his relatives were poor farmers, but they were happy, until the Zimbabwe Army's notorious 5th Brigade began visiting them in 1983 to persecute anyone perceived to be against President Robert Mugabe. Mpofu was 5 years old.
Our uncles were a bit older than us. We'd be given sticks to beat up our grannies and our grandfathers, That kind of beating where young boys would be asked to beat even their parents, their aunties, and their uncles. As small boys were made to watch those kinds of things.
Mpofu says he became aggressive because of the trauma and only learned to deal with his anger and fear later in life. He says the Mugabe government's Gukurahundi operation against the Ndebele people was genocide, with thousands murdered within 2 years.
Some of the people in the village disappeared, even up to now, they are not known where they are.
Mpofu says because of what happened to his people, ZANU-PF can't be trusted, no matter who's in charge of it. As a student in Bulawayo in 2004, Mpofu started a newspaper to cover underdevelopment in Matabele land. Soon after, he says, the harassment began.
You'd receive calls in the middle of the night from a hidden number. Once you answer hello, and the next question is, where are you? Sometimes you say, I'm home, and then the person cuts, and then you panic, like, what have I done? Who have I told that I'm at home?
Mpofu often has to go into hiding. The government soon shut the newspaper down. Mpofu moved to South Africa in 2006 to study. He returned to Bulawayo in 2008.
When I went back, there was only matches being sold and sold. There was no electricity, no water. It was really depressing. People were sleeping in bank queues. It was terrible. I just bought a ticket back to South Africa and I couldn't.
Mpofu says this experience cured his homesickness. Since then, he's remained in South Africa, only visiting Zimbabwe briefly in 2014.
One comfort that I got was that at least there was food in the shops. I could see there was a high number of ex-Japanese cars on the roads, which suggested that to a certain extent some people were doing well to afford to buy fuel and to afford to buy those kinds of cars.
Mpofu is married to a South African engineer, and they have a 1-year-old daughter and a 4-year-old son. He says when they're older, he'll make sure Zimbabwe is part of them.
Zimbabwe is my home of birth. They have to connect with the people in back in Zimbabwe. But they have to know that it's a place that gave me terrible experiences. It's a place that gave their forefathers terrible experiences.
Mpofu isn't convinced that the new government will spark much positive change in Zimbabwe. He's also not surprised President Emmerson Mnangagwa's administration won't prosecute Mugabe.
He's being granted immunity by the same people who are responsible for the genocide in Matabeleland. It's actually painful. We're waiting for a time where we would be in a position to actually take Mugabe to court. This will have a ripple effect because it will implicate even the current president, Mnangagwa.
Mpofu says the new president's words, "Let bygones be bygones," at his inauguration, are still ringing in his ears.
You cannot wish genocide away and say, let's forget, let bygones be bygones, let's move ahead. No, you need to address the issues, you need reparations if needs be, people need closure. There are certain people who are still buried in mass graves in Zimbabwe now.
Mpofu says he'll begin to believe in a new Zimbabwe when Mnangagwa allows the release of 2 reports on the killings in Matabele land that remain secret. I'm Darren Taylor for VOA News in Johannesburg.
A Zimbabwe High Court today has postponed for another day the bail hearing for Ignatius Chombo, the former finance minister. The court also pushed back the hearing for Kutsunai Chipanga, the former leader of the ruling ZANU-PF party's youth arm. The two men are now expected to be in court Thursday. Both were detained shortly after the military took control of the government last month. Chombo faces corruption charges, and Chipanga is accused of making statements that undermine the military. Their bail hearing was also postponed last week. The two want to be released on bail until their trial, but prosecutors say they could flee the country if they are released from detention.
A top troop leader for the U.S. African Command says the command is watching closely to see where remnants of the so-called Islamic State flee as it steadily loses territory in Syria and Iraq. Commander Chief Master Sergeant Ramon Colon Lopez says poverty combined with large populations of youth who see little opportunity means Africa could be a ripe breeding ground for extremists. He spoke recently with VOA's Pentagon correspondent Carol Baba.
Today we are joined by Command Chief Master Sergeant Ramon Colon Lopez. You are the senior enlisted leader for United States Africa Command. Tell me about some of the biggest activities that you carry out.
We train a lot of Africans, both in the maritime and land realm. We're helping them build their air forces to be able to transport and ensure proper logistics systems to be able to be synchronized from country to country. And we also help from the state side, the Department of State side, to improve governance in a lot of these regions.
I want to also ask you about the other things that U.S. troops are doing in the Lake Chad region. What can you tell us about what we're doing there and about the threat in that area?
So that is clearly an area where Boko Haram operates. And if you look at the AFRICOM's lines of effort, that is line of effort number 3, to go ahead and contain Boko Haram. Clearly, Boko Haram has been causing a lot of trouble for the local governments. And as partners working with those governments, we are training, advising, and assisting their forces to be able to get after African solutions to African problems.
The youth bulge, the number of unemployed men that are going to be around in the coming years and expanding in the coming years in Africa, that's a ripe pool for a group like Islamic State. Are you concerned that a place in Africa could be the next place where Islamic State tries to make their so-called caliphate?
So I equated it in a conversation to having a puddle of water and dropping a cinder block in the middle of it. That's what we ended up doing in the Middle East when we got after ISIS. We ended up dropping a great instrument of military power, and we're crushing them. Now, that water that got dispersed has to go somewhere, maybe going to the Pacific, maybe going into the Africa and Europe areas of responsibilities. While we cannot pinpoint any specific location where the heartland is going to be or their so-called caliphate, I will tell you that any country that has got a youth bulge at this time is got to be a concern to us, because there are few opportunities, there's even fewer hope, and you can see by the migration numbers and the instability in some of those countries that when you have no options and here comes an extremist that is often your motorbike and a bride, what do you think you're going to do? Your family's starving, you can't provide for them, and somebody's giving you an option. And you don't have the means to migrate, because migration costs money. Migration is leading into slavery up in Libya. We're seeing that right now in open source. So the poor African people are having very little options to go ahead and progress in life. So, of course, we're concerned about those numbers, and we're concerned about that youth bulge.
I just want to wrap up, and I know you don't want to rank the threats, but it would be important to our audience to know where you personally are most worried about in Africa.
I worry about the outposts that have U.S. military members that are getting after this threat. And it can be 5 different countries. You know, I worry about them because we can see what happened out there when the enemy decides to overpower the United States of America. And everybody's looking for an advantage in combat. And one side is going to win, and one side is going to come out basically figuring out what they need to do next to go ahead and be better than who they were that day. So if you ask me about things that I worry about the safety of our men and women and making sure that we're providing them with every single asset so that they have a fighting chance when that time comes. Because that's who we are. We're a Department of War, and we get after those things. It's not easy, and it's extremely dangerous. So my charge, if I need to worry about something, I need to make sure they got everything they need. And if they don't have it, to come here and advocate for it. But what I will say is that if you're one of those enemies, Al-Shabaab, AQIM, the Islamic State, Boko Haram, we will come after you, and we will get you, and we will make sure that the Africans get after you, and they will get you. That is our charter in Africa, and that is what we'll do.
That was AFRICOM's Command Chief Master Sergeant Ramon Colon Lopez. He was speaking with VOA's Carla Babb. As the military presence in the streets of Harare continues, Zimbabweans are becoming more and more uncomfortable. Hashtag Operation Restore Legacy has surfaced on social media as people try to understand why the army is still needed in the streets. The military has been allegedly targeting vendors and taxi drivers in the city, and many citizens feel their presence is intimidating. Here are some of their comments.
Achanda Mukombami says, "The army needs to go back to the barracks. This is intimidation. We are not a violent nation. The police can do their job. They do not need the army."
Pachena Tawanda says, "Let the soldiers finish their job. Only sellouts and traitors of Zimbabwe who are working in conjunction with the imperialists should be worried about the army's presence.
Nera Zimbabwe says, "Military government has military solutions to everything. Vendors are just poor unarmed civilians fending for a living. They are neither criminals nor targets."
Tichingo says, "So soldiers are assaulting vendors and taxi drivers now under the Operation Restore Legacy. Honeymoon phase over."
Irene says, "Farms going up in smoke. Mansions going up in smoke. Only two criminal elements in custody. This is New Zimbabwe? Why is this happening post-coup not considered to be a coup? Where is the fresh start, Operation Restore Legacy? Who is being played here? We want real change."
That was a sample of social media comments expressing Zimbabweans' concerns over the continuing presence of soldiers in the streets.
This week, Malawi's former president Joyce Banda and Liberia's president Ellen Johnson Sirleaf are in Washington, D.C. Part of their mission here is to advocate for a greater role in public life for women, especially in Africa. At an African Union event yesterday, President Banda and U.S. Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee spoke with VOA Zimbabwe Service Chief Dimyake Mwakalieye about the need to give girls a better start.
We must create an environment at household level where the girl child will thrive. For that to happen, for her to be valued and be treated equally like her brother, we must ensure that the parents change their mindset about the girl child. She eats equally like the boy child. She's not overworked. She's not defiled because of traditional beliefs. She's not initiated. She's not mutilated. Because most foreign countries begin to allocate financial resources for the adolescent girl child. As far as I'm concerned, as an African woman leader, that's too late. We need to start from 0 to 10. Protect this girl child. Fish out those that we see with leadership qualities. Mentor them and provide education to them. Because when they don't have resources to go to high school, that's why they're getting married at 15.
Sheila Jackson Lee is a member of the U.S. Congress from the state of Texas. She says women in politics must lead the way so that others can succeed.
As I visited Kenya, for example, to hear young women get up and talk about businesses they're starting with courage and grit and seeking financial support for their dreams, it's important for us to be symbols for women, young women, to be support for elderly women, and to be a pathway for women who are on the journey of supporting and growing their family, but also growing their economic opportunities. So I think leadership among women is to be giving, and it is to reach out, and it is to be a standard bearer of opportunity, and to also make yourself available to be a mentor for the success of others.
That was Representative Sheila Jackson Lee. She and President Joyce Banda spoke with VOA's Dimyake Mwakalieye. The captain of a fishing vessel was arrested in Italy on Tuesday after allegedly throwing one of his crew overboard in a bid to stop police finding the undocumented worker who could not swim. In a sting dubbed Operation Chains, police slapped Andrea Caretti, 46, in cuffs and accused him of illegally hiring a Senegalese worker and ruthlessly pushing him into the sea off Tuscany in June last year. Reporter Josephine McKenna spoke with my colleague Kim Lewis about the incident, which highlights the plight of migrants who are seeking a better life in Europe.
Yes, this is a shocking case where police have arrested an Italian man, accusing him, first of all, of illegally hiring a Senegalese worker and ruthlessly pushing him into the sea off the coast of Tuscany in June last year. The Senegalese man, who didn't have legal papers apparently, was saved by a lifeguard who spotted him in the water, and he told his rescuer that the captain had pushed him into the sea because he was afraid of the coast guard carrying out checks. So this fishing vessel, this fisherman who's been accused, is accused of knocking him overboard despite knowing that he wasn't able to swim, according to police. So this is quite a shocking case. We don't know where the Senegalese man has gone. He was probably afraid of being arrested, and he had also been threatened, apparently, by Andrea Carotti, the man, the fisherman who was employing him illegally.
So he was rescued.
He was rescued, and the captain, incidentally, has also been accused of regularly exploiting undocumented workers on his fishing vessel, forcing them to work for around $12 a day. So that's really another indication of how many migrants are exploited in Italy and often paid terrible wages because they are undocumented workers.
And also, it's such a risk anyway for migrants trying to reach Europe from North Africa and crossing the Mediterranean Sea. There's so many times the boats have capsized and they have drowned. So just not being able to swim, or even if you can swim, sometimes being dumped overboard, you could run the risk of drowning.
Yes, we've seen many, many cases of this in the last few years. And just this year, there are around 3,000 migrants who are dead or unaccounted for, according to the International Organization for Migration. We've had 165,000 arrivals in Europe, but still that terrible concern about those who've gone missing, often in capsized boats, leaving no trace, drowning very quickly, because too often sub-Saharan migrants just don't know how to swim at all. And this case of the fisherman is a terrible example, once again highlighting some of the challenges facing these migrants who come to Europe.
That was reporter Josephine McKenna. She spoke with my colleague Kim Lewis in Rome. Please enjoy the song Yuri Yuri. I'm with you, my lover. Everything is really, really your love. You make my heart to do yori yori. Nobody can love you the way I do. I'm with you, my lover. With you, everything is really, really your love. You make my heart to do yori yori. Nobody can love you the way I do. I'm with you, my love. Same thing, way they make me feel like say you go be my wife. Now the same thing, weeping, they make my strength of say I do waste my time. Now because I respect you, girl, spend it for you every night and day. I pray for you, because of you I fly like butterfly, my love. Now this thing make you do the same. I don't lose my face, my pain. But nobody can stop me from loving you. I'm with you, my lover. Really, really, your love, they make my heart to do yori yori. Nobody can love you the way I do. I'm with you, my lover, lover. With you, everything is really, really, your love, they make my heart to do yori yori. Nobody can love you the way I do. I'm with you, my love. You see the way all the things they flow. I'm so much to see how they love you so. Get out of suspect, say they know, no. Say that you be the person where they make me flow. Ooh, I tell them, say you are the best thing. And just why you are so interesting. Nobody is understanding the way you are. Oh, my beautiful girl. Now all these men people, they say, I don't need to my face, my day. But they can't stop me from loving you. I'm with you, my love, love. That is it for us this evening on VOA's Zimbabwe Today. I'm Kudzanai Mutetwa.
And I'm Chidonjere. We'll be back again tomorrow at 9:30 p.m. Zimbabwe time for the latest news and analysis in English. VOA Shona and Dabele broadcast can be heard at 6 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. Zimbabwe time.
Stay with us around the clock on Facebook at Studio 7, VOA Dabele, and VOA Shona, as well as our VOA website, www.studio7news.com.